Production. Recorded live.
You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more.
Welcome to episode 69 on Cache Repair Ethics. I'm Daryl W. Four, filling in for XPunkX, who's out today due to a family commitment. If you want to participate in the show, please call 724-444-7444 and dial Talkcast ID 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners during the show tonight. And all of our show notes and everything can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. And you can also click on the Join to Participate button and join us live right now. You can also call our voicemail line at any time at 206-350-3GPS or follow us on Twitter at Twitter/GCPodcast for notices and tips. Well, I had a pretty good weekend, actually. We played some hooky, and I actually wrote a little bit of a blog entry, but got out on Saturday for a little while, got rained out, but 3 FTFs on Saturday. Then Sunday we went back out again after some family commitments, and I think in total we got about 19 caches for the weekend. So, you know, pretty good weekend for me. How about you, Montu Rider?
Well, unfortunately, it's same-o down here. Hot, rainy, and no chance to go out hunting caches. We did get some good news, though, on the railroad. We're looking at having the phase two that we're working on right now done in just another couple of months. That'll be opening up another large section of the track.
Awesome.
But other than that, it ain't been much down here in soggy, sunny Florida.
So any,
I hear you've
got
some news from Andy.
Yeah, I do, actually. He says that his job search is actually going pretty well, and his last interview with a school was very encouraging. So hopefully he'll be getting a job fairly soon, and I'm sure we'll be hearing about that here on the show. Well, let's jump into the news. And as you might remember, last week we mentioned that the leaks had started wandering around about a new Garmin GPSR. And as of Thursday, I believe it was, that actually became official. The Garmin Oregon series was officially released with prices from $479.99 US to $639.99 US. The unit size is is 2.3 inches by 4.5 inches by 1.4 inches. Comes in at 6.8 ounces with batteries. And it uses the same display as the Colorado's, actually. It's a 3-inch diagonal. 240 by 400 pixel transflective display, works on AA batteries, alkaline, NIM, lithium, and they're estimating about 16 hours, but they don't tell you what type of batteries it is. They recommend lithium as being the best, so I'm guessing that that might be what they're using for their estimates. It also uses the IEC 60529 IPX7 waterproofing, but does not float. And what that means is that the GPS can withstand accidental immersion in 1 meter of water for up to 30 minutes. It is a touchscreen, and it doesn't look like there's any buttons except for power. USB, uses a micro SD card slot, supports 1,000 waypoints, auto routing with optional street maps, does support the paperless caching, and Where I Go Player. Montu, you want to go into the individual models?
Not a problem. First off, the price between the models that are coming out for the Oregon 200, $479.99, the Oregon 300, $533.32, the Oregon 400T, $639.99, which is also the price for the 400C and the 400I. The maps between the units, the Oregon 200 and 300 are base map only. The Oregon 400T is topographic. The C is blue chart, and the I is inland lakes. Built-in memory on the Oregon 200 is 24 megabit. On the Oregon 300 is 850 megabit. And on the 400, they didn't disclose that, so they're keeping that a secret for right now. Electronic compass and altimeter. There's none on the Oregon 200, but there is on the 3 and 400 series. Wireless unit to unit, not on the Oregon 200, but there is in the Oregon 300 and 400, compatible with the Colorados.
Now, if you have something you'd like to add or comment on the new Oregon series, give us a call at 724-444-7444 and select TalkCast ID 7525 and hit star 1 to request a talk. Now, let's take a look at just the Colorado 300 and the Oregon 300 to give you kind of an idea of the difference between the two units. And first off, the size. The Colorado is 2.4 by 5.5 by 1.4 inches. And if you remember from the Oregon, that's roughly the same size, but it is a full inch shorter than the Colorado. And then the weight with the batteries, you're actually looking at a half ounce more for the Colorado than for the Oregon. So it's a little bit lighter. Lasts an extra hour on the batteries, according to the manufacturer specs. The 300 is specced out as 384 megabytes of available RAM. The Oregon 300 was specced out at 850, so you are looking at 466, almost a half gig of RAM more on the Oregon. Card slot supports SD on the Colorado, micro SD on the 300. And for the interface, the Colorado 300, as you probably remember, has the two soft buttons and the rock and roller wheel. The Oregon is just the touchscreen. Now, no information has been provided on the operating conditions for either one of those, so it might cause some issues in cold or hot weather, as we discussed last time, working with that touchscreen. Now, the list price for the Colorado 300 is $535.70, and for the Oregon 300, it's only $535.32. So you're looking at a difference of about a $2.50, not a huge difference, but places are taking orders for these right now if you want to get in your pre-orders, and I haven't seen anyone that has any significant discounts on them, so you're pretty much looking at list price all the way down the road. Now, Montu, I think there was some news for Magellan users.
That there is. For the Magellan users, there is some new maps available from yesterday's release. Magellan, one of the largest growing GPS brands, and Intermap Technologies, a leading provider of digital maps, today announced the first commercial availability of AccuTerra maps for the Magellan Triton and Explorer's handheld GPSs, providing outdoor enthusiasts with advanced topographical maps and off-road points of interest. Magellan customers now have access to digital terrain data, off-road and recreational-related roads, trails, and points of interest such as campgrounds, service facilities, and landmarks. Additionally, customers can benefit from a land management data layer that displays the location of public lands, national forests, wilderness areas, state parks, etc., and private property for most recreation areas in the United States. Customers can now download the maps for the lower 48 states and Hawaii from the Magellan website for use during the summer recreation season. AccuTerra maps are available via download at http://magellangps.com. Magellan devices supporting the AccuTerra products are the Triton 400, 500, 1500, and 2000 units, and the Explorers 400, 500, 600, and XL units. Now I believe we've got some voicemail from Spin Doc Bob from Down Under. How about we play that tape?
Sounds good to me.
Hey, it's Spin Doc Bob calling from Australia. Just calling in with some feedback because unfortunately the show is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon our time, which means being a good worker that I am, I can't participate. But I thought while I'm walking to work this morning, I'd tell you how I prepare for a case run or looking for cases on the weekend. Each Thursday, I get a pocket query from geocaching.com, and that gives me the closest 200 caches that I haven't found in my area. If I'm going to go for a bit of a trip up into the Blue Mountains or down to Melbourne, for example, then what I'll do is I'll have those already set up, but I don't receive them except for the week before that I'm going. I then load those into GSAC, and depending on whether I need to do any filtering or not, there might be a little bit of tinkering around. Then I upload those into the GPS, and then I export the GPX file that corresponds with that upload to the GPS, and I upload that into my mobile phone, my Nokia N80, and I use Smart GPX to then have all those descriptions and logs from those caches loaded up into the phone. So that way, then when I go geocaching, I've got my geocaching bag with my first aid kit and water and all those bits and pieces, along with the trade items, and just my GPS and my telephone. And then when I'm finding the caches in Smart GPX, I can then mark them as found, and it adds them to my calendar, which is built into the phone. So when I finish at the end of the day, I can just look at the calendar, which also syncs up with my laptop, my Mac laptop, and I can look in iCal and get a full list of all the caches that I found for the day and check them off as I log my finds. Anyway, good to hear that you got the audio issues sorted out in the last episode. X-Plane takes you come through quite clearly. And it's always good having a listen to you guys on the way to work as I walk in each morning to the railway station, so making sure that I'm not spending too much money on fuel. All the best and safe geocaching.
We're glad you can enjoy the show on your way to work, and thanks for sharing your workflow. You can also call our voicemail line anytime, 206-350-3GPS.
Well, with that, let's move into our topic for the evening, which is cache repair ethics. You can always get a little hairy, this can always get a little hairy, as some cachers can be a little sensitive about their hides. During the post-interview conversations we have on Cachemaniacs, we've heard some stories, and I think it's a little odd about cachers who have been scolded by the cache owners for doing a little bit of repair. Tonight we want to talk about some of the considerations while you're out caching and how to help without upsetting the cache owners. For those of you listening live, call in and hit request to talk if you have anything to add to the conversation at any time. Now, Montu, what are some of the things we can start doing?
Well, for one, make sure you're not changing the cache. Many of the problems caches run into are largely due to lack of communication. Remember that you always want to contact the cache owner with the details about your repairs and any problems directly rather than through a log. You still want to make a note in the log, but keep the details as limited and private, into a private conversation. Sometimes you can take care of the cache without contacting the owner first, but some of the others you might want to check with the owner before taking action.
Yeah, now some of the things that you can pretty much assume you can do right there on the spot is you can add a logbook, but make sure to leave the old logbook in the cache. If there's not room, maybe just take a couple of sheets if you need them. But make sure to leave those old logbooks because the cache owners generally like to have those. Plastic bags that are torn, cache owners, no matter who they are going to be pretty happy if you've gone and replaced torn bags. You can add pencils and basically anything that you might consider as a consumable item. However, when you're looking at some of the items that are a little bit more personal, like the cache container, for instance, then you'll want to contact the cache owner before replacing them. Montu, I think you actually had an instance where you replaced a cache container for someone.
Yeah, actually we did. Now, on mine, I will admit I replaced the cache container without checking with the cache owner first, but in this instance, it actually wound up coming out okay. It was a cache that had been disabled in my area for quite some time. Even though caches were actually still going out and finding it, the local reviewer even posted a note, why is the cache disabled? And the owner of the cache at that time posted a response, well, the reason why is because I haven't been able to get out there and clean it up, because people have been logging that the logbooks were wet. This was in a very poor ceiling tackle box or utility box was what the original cache container was. There was no seal on it at all. And so everything in the container was just soaking wet. She noted in her response to the reviewer, you know, hey, the reason is I forget exactly how many months it was pregnant at the time, but she noted, you know, I'm so many months pregnant, and so I can't get out there to do maintenance on the cache at this time. But since everybody's enjoying it, I'll go ahead and activate it for now. Just please be advised, this is why the logbook's wet. So I read that, and it had been after we had found the cache ourselves, so I decided, okay, let's do something nice for her. I had a couple of 50 caliber ammo cans lying around that I hadn't found a place to hide myself, so I decided, let's do a geocaching-style baby shower gift. And so I went out there with the ammo can. We had it all marked up with the GC number and everything on it, and I took it out there, moved everything from her original cache container, put it into the new one, and put the new container where the old one had been hiding. And then when I got back, I emailed her directly, and she was tickled pink that somebody would do that for her, because she was feeling so bad that she couldn't get out there to do the maintenance on it because of her condition. But it all wound up working out for the best.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, you know, that's the kind of thing that you don't necessarily want to be carrying with you when you go caching anyway. You know, if you know the hider, maybe it's something that, you know, if you do have it with you, you know they're not going to mind doing that. But frankly, as a hider, I think I'd react a little bit differently to someone replacing my cache that I knew versus someone that I didn't know. You know, I've had a few kinds of people replace logs, and even some nano containers, especially after they've dropped them on the ground and can't find them. But a full-size cache where I put a little bit of extra thought into the container, and, you know, if it's still a weather-tight container no matter what, I don't think I'd want someone replacing that. I'd want to go out and do that myself. Montu?
Yes. Hang on. I've just had a little bit of difficulty here on my end.
Oh, no problem.
But, yeah, I would agree with you on that. I know I've got a couple of caches out there that I've gone to some extra work on. For instance, my Incredible Hulk cache that I've got out there. I wouldn't want somebody just replacing that one. Now, if it isn't weathertight, you know, that is a different problem. This is a good place for those plastic bags. Make sure the contents are dry and free of bugs when you seal them up in the new plastic bags to prevent further damage. It's important, too, that you contact the owner directly to let them know that you've done what you could, but that their cache container is leaking and will need to be replaced. It's also a good idea to log the needs maintenance on the geocaching.com site, simply that the container is leaking and needs attention. If you haven't noticed that option yet, it's just like logging a find or a DNF. Just look for the needs maintenance option in the pop-up menu.
Well, that brings up another good point about caches that can't be repaired, and I ran into one of those on Sunday. In our case, we found some toys on the ground and what appears to have once been part of the logbook. We had one of the previous finders with us, too, and they confirmed that the cache, which was an ammo box, wasn't where it had been. So we were pretty sure that it was gone, especially after we checked the previous logs and they mentioned scattered debris. So after a thorough search of the area and nothing but scattered bits of the cache, we decided to claim the find, veto the geojunk, and log the cache needs maintenance. And unfortunately, you know, the junk was just junk at that point. It had been out there for several rains, bags were torn, you know, stuff was destroyed. You know, a tip, though, once you've done those maintenance logs, you can actually go back and delete the log itself, but the need maintenance flag still remains on the cache page. That trick also works when you're dropping travelers. But getting back to the situation from Sunday, in hindsight, I'm not sure, though, that I should have logged the find, since I'm not 100% sure that the mush that I found was, in fact, paper from the logbook. It looked like it, but it was mush. I couldn't really tell. And as far as I'm concerned, you have to find the logbook to find or to claim a find on the cache, you know, except for Earth caches and virtual caches. What's your take on that, Montu?
That one, I try and describe the site as best I could to the cache owner, and if they confirm that I actually was in ground zero and that that mush and goo and whatever else was indeed the cache, then I'd probably log it. But that one would definitely be an iffy one even for me. I'm not sure if I'd log it necessarily. But,
well, if anyone else has anything they would like to contribute, go ahead and either type it into the chat room or give us a call at 724-444-7444. And work TalkCast ID 7525 and push *1 to request to talk. Now, Geekboy is saying that he probably wouldn't be counting that as a find. And then Spindock is saying that he also believes that the key is communicating with the cache owner. And definitely that's really what it comes down to for taking care of these caches. You know, the basic, easy little stuff, you know, that's, you know, the pens, pencils, logbooks, that kind of stuff. Then, you know, that stuff's fine. But anything more, you really need to talk to the cache owner. Even if you replace that little stuff, it's always nice to tell the cache owner, hey, there was a problem. I took care of it. You know, if someone emailed them before, they might be making a trip out there, and you just save them the trip. Let's see, Spindock's typing a bunch more stuff here, and he says, they'll let you know if they would appreciate it being fixed. If you get no reply, then unfortunately it's a goner. And he too replaces the small items like the Ziploc bags, pens, or notepad, but definitely not the container. And Candy is saying that she brings Ziploc bags in her cash bag, and other than that, she writes the owner. Yeah, I take the logbooks and the Ziploc bags. Unfortunately, I tend to leave both of those in the car most of the time, so I typically don't have those with me when I go out there. What do you take with you for cache repair, Montu?
Usually it's just spare pens or pencils and logbooks, although I will admit I am severely guilty. I normally don't carry that much with me. Normally it's just the trading stuff, but I do try to make a point of carrying at least something in the event that the cache needs maintenance. So I've usually got at least the bags and or the logbooks with me. So,
all right, with that, why don't we wrap up today's show? Join us each Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight on the TalkShoe service. X-Punk X will be back next week as we talk about our little caching secrets, our little caching gems. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, TalkCast ID 7525, or sign into TalkShoe.com. Our show notes and links to all the past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can call at our voicemail line at 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. So go ahead and give us a call. Leave us some information about your special little caching gems, or even a little bit more info about your opinion on caching cache repair ethics. And we'll see you next week.